the Lakers make a small move to get LeBron some reinforcements. The trade rumor mill is buzzing, and we got lots to talk about there. Plus, scoring is out of control. Just out of control. This is Locked On Nuggets. NBA. Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily source for all things NBA from the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thanks for joining us and making us your first listen. We appreciate you guys being a part of the community, checking us out wherever you do, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any other podcast app that you can find on the World Wide Web, or on YouTube, where you can find a live version of the show. This episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and co-host over at Locked On Nuggets. Joined by David Ramil. He is co-host over at Locked On Heat. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. We got to talk about the Rui Hachimura trade and what this means for the Los Angeles Lakers as they try and get some reinforcements for LeBron James. We're going to talk about the trade rumor mill and some other names that have popped up in those kinds of discussions and whether there'll be more moves to be made, especially with, we'll talk a little bit about David's Miami Heat and if they've got anything cooking. And the final segment, we'll go over the games from Monday night, including just a scoring bonanza across the league. Jalen Green, future sixth man. That's a joke. with another matches his career high. The Bucks put up 150. Spurs Blazers were 74-74 at the half. No one can play defense. Except apparently the Orlando Magic. We'll get to all that and more in the final segment today. David, glad to have you with us. Excited to be on with you for this episode. Let's start right here. The Los Angeles Lakers on Monday finally made a move. And no, Russell Westbrook did not get dealt. And no, they didn't get Miles Turner or Buddy Hield. However, they did make a trade. The Wizards will send Rui Hachimura in exchange for the Bulls' second-round pick this year, the Lakers' second-round pick in 2029, and the least favorable of the Wizards and Lakers' second-rounders in 2028. That's like a real year that they're pretending is 2028. It moves Rui Hachimura, who it's been interesting to kind of see the reactions from everyone. You can tell that there are folks that like haven't watched the Wizards at all. They're like, who? The Lakers got whom? And then there's some folks that have watched the Wizards that are like, hey, this is actually a pretty good pickup. And then there are Wizards fans who are like, yeah, you can have him. That's fine. You can have him. What was your reaction when the Lakers traded for Rui Hachimura on Monday?
I wasn't sure that it quite made sense from a Lakers perspective, right? Because I don't know how Rui fits into the Lakers plan for this season. Because if there's one thing that we've learned from watching LeBron over the years is that he needs a certain type of player in order to function in his universe. To coexist alongside LeBron is not an easy challenge. And I don't know that Hachimura is ready for that challenge just yet. And given that, like, he is not your typical outside shooter who can just be in catch and shoot situations when LeBron passes him the ball, whips it across court, et cetera. However, the things that we've seen LeBron do, how to play alongside, that takes time. If you're a veteran player or even a much more established one, but kind of perimeter-centric, then maybe you can find a way to at least function alongside LeBron in the short term. In the long term, I love the deal because I think Hachimura does have potential, and I think he could be a good pickup. But the two things just don't seem to equate in my mind in terms of what is the purpose of this move. And are you trying to win now? Are you just trying to bolster a roster because you're not sure if Davis is going to be available or he's going to be missing more time? Or are you kind of just throwing the towel on this season and setting yourself up for next season? Because the Lakers have already announced that they're planning on re-signing him, or at least that's the reporting around this deal, is that they plan on extending Hachimura, something the Wizards weren't willing to do because I guess they had kind of given up on seeing whether or not that potential would thrive in Washington. So I'm not quite sure what the purpose of it on paper. And if you break it down in its simplest form, it's a good pickup in terms of, you know, you, some people argue that you're giving up a lot. I don't think you're giving up that much. Again, 3 second round picks for a team like the Lakers, who probably aren't going to take the time to develop those picks with LeBron and is still playing at this level. Makes sense. You're getting some player who can function, who can do things from a perimeter defense kind of perspective. He's switchable. He's a decent defender with potential to become even better in that regard. Offensively, I think he's still a little limited, but he's been shooting the ball better and things of that sort. So, it's a fine deal. I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but and this can all change, right? Because this is how it works out with trades. It's like, paper. It sounds like it's a good deal. But then all of a sudden, there are real human beings involved here having to play real basketball at a really high level. And it might not work out the way a lot of people expect it to.
I do enjoy that David covers the Heat for Locked On Heat, which you should subscribe to and listen to. Great show.
Absolutely.
But that also that David's like, I don't know if you gave up a lot, because Pat Riley's like, there's a second round of the draft? They have two? So
they don't need second round picks. They just get undrafted players and turn them into superstars, Matt. That's how they do it here in Miami.
That's true. I love this move for the Lakers. So Rui was a guy that I looked at. I watched in preseason, was like, oh, hey, he looks like a lot more polished and way sharper. And every time that I've watched, I've been like, oh, I like how Rui Hachimura looks. So he's shooting only this season 33.7% from three. That's unimpressive and not what you want to see. However, last season he shot 44.7%. What I will basically say is, given the number of minutes that he got early in his career, like he was averaging like 31 minutes off the jump in his sophomore season, he went from 29% to 33% to 45%. And then through 30 games a season, he was all the way back down to 34%. So that's not great in terms of the regression. There's a lot of ways that this can go. And it's, I'm not going to say that, like, I would say it probably leans a little bit towards the over of guys that improve as they get older, because most people improve as they do something for a long enough period of time. Like, most guys settle in and they become more reliable shooters. A good comparison here is actually Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who is considered to be like a really good shooter coming out of college and did not shoot well with Detroit. Like, he just didn't shoot well because he was in a messy situation. And then later, like, got his defense and his 3-point shooting down. He became a key component on a championship team and is looking to do it again with the Nuggets. So I think one of the things here is Rui's individual metrics are really good. So synergy and isolation, he does a good job. Pick and roll, defending the ball handler, he does a good job. He's like 80th percentile in the top three play sets that he's involved in, guarding spot ups, pick and roll, and isolations. He does a fine job. I think isolation is actually more like 56th percentile, which isn't awesome. It's good enough, right? Wizards fans have a bunch of clips where, like, he's played horrible defense. He falls asleep in off-ball defense consistently. When I look at that, and I look at the fact that the Wizards defense is still 3 points better with Rui on the floor than it is with him on the bench, that's noticeable to me. That basically he has these low effort plays and the overall net is positive for a guy who comes off the bench. That's interesting. The key here, I think, is when I watch the Wizards, I see a bunch of guys that know the deal. These are veteran guys that have been around, and they know that this team's not going anywhere. Brad Beal misses about every other game. Kristaps Porzingis misses about two out of every three. Like, they just are never together, and they kind of know that, like, this team's not really going anywhere. It's just kind of spinning its wheels, and it mostly exists as, like, a bunch of pieces to be traded. If you're a young guy in that spot looking to get your contract extension and you're held up because the Wizards don't know if they're coming or going, that's a real problem for you. So I'm not surprised that his effort waned. Would you like to have seen him bust his backside and played harder? Sure, you'd feel a lot better about it. He's probably getting extended if he does that, but he didn't. But now he has an opportunity to make good with a Lakers organization that needs him. So if he can hit those shots, now look, this is going to be a pressure situation. LeBron passes to you, you better shoot, you better make it. But they need guys. They just need bodies. They need NBA bodies, because there are a lot of times when the Lakers are completely outsized, especially without Anthony Davis. You can tell that, like, what they're building here is a more athletic, bigger, more physical lineup. And if Rui can translate those physical skills and the polish that he's added and add a little bit of shooting, because he'll have open looks off of Anthony Davis and LeBron James when Davis gets healthy for however long he's healthy, to me, it makes sense, especially when you're looking at these second rounders. It keeps the powder dry in terms of the two firsts the Lakers still have to make another move. They need to. And it gets them a little bit of a reinforcement now for a guy in Kendrick Nunn who never lived up to his potential. for me, that's a win. Just making a move to try and get LeBron some help here to keep them in the playoff race, I think is probably worth it.
Okay. Do you see it as being not necessarily a seamless fit, but you think he's going to be able to adjust to playing in this high-pressure situation perhaps a lot more quickly than I do?
I don't know. That's the thing with young guys. He's 24, right? Like, I don't know. Like, I'll cop out and just say I have no idea, because I've seen guys that should succeed in that spot fail miserably, and that's veterans and young guys and all sorts. And I've seen guys that should absolutely crack in those situations do really well next to LeBron. So we'll see what Rui Hachimura is made of, because he's going to be in the spotlight now. Speaking of trades, there's a lot more trades to talk about. I've got some stuff to talk about with the Portland Trailblazers and the Phoenix Suns. We'll get to a question that I want to ask David about whether Miami is going to finally pull the trigger on something that they should probably be looking at, or whether they're once again going to try and just win, I guess, more like 16 rock fights in the NBA playoffs. We'll see what their plan is in the next segment. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I need to tell you about FanDuel Sportsbook. That's right. We have a new sponsor here at Locked On. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On. They're the number one sportsbook in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They've got so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers join today to get started with a $150 credit in free bets. $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn, LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets, from the money line to point spreads to player props. Plus, you can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. I'm going to be definitely playing some same game parlays this weekend, back in Brock Purdy versus those Philadelphia Eagles. I think the Purdy party continues, as I think the Niners are going to make the Super Bowl. All on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So football fans, don't miss out. Place your $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA, thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Appreciate you guys being with us. David Ramil from Locked On Heat alongside me, Matt Moore from Locked On Nuggets. You can catch David on Twitter at DRamil13 and let him know all of your thoughts on Jalen Green's 42-point performance. We'll get to that.
Career high. In the third superstar, Jalen Green, taking off.
The third segment tonight. But we got some trade stuff I want to talk about here off the jump. So, you know, here's what I'll say. The Portland Trail Blazers, the Phoenix Suns, the Toronto Raptors, the Atlanta Hawks, and the Dallas Mavericks. Those are the teams that I would say are what I've heard are most involved in trade conversations. That doesn't mean that they are. It could, like, the Mavericks don't talk as much. That's mostly other teams coming out. Like, the Mavericks try really hard to keep things under the table. Them and the Spurs are pretty quiet as far as leaks go. The Blazers, in my understanding, are looking to make a move, that they have kind of realized, like, okay, this isn't working. In some ways, having Damian Lillard and having him so committed to the franchise is helpful. Dame got a little prickly when asked about the trade deadline, because basically he thought the implication was more that, you know, is he going to ask out? And it wasn't really that question. It was more like, hey, do you want to see them make a move? But it also creates drama if he says so. So he was pretty prickly the other night to a reporter that asked. I think, Yusuf Nurkic and Josh Hart are two names that I would definitely look at as available. That's based off of conversations with people around the league, that the understanding is that Josh Hart and Yusuf Nurkic are two names that are available. I think it's probably, like, I've been on this a long time, that it's hard to build a good defense when you have Damian Lillard and Yusuf Nurkic together. I think you can build a good defense with one or the other, but not both. Easier with Nurk than Dame, but the combination causes you some issues. Josh Hart has been a really great rebounder, but there's a lot of conversations about him maybe getting benched for Nasir Little. Hart obviously still trying to kind of make his name in this league. I think Hart's really good and can add some value. I do kind of wonder if they're a natural fit to talk to the Portland Trailblazers, or I'm sorry, the Phoenix Suns, maybe get a deal done for Jay Crowder, see what else the Suns want to do. Suns have been looking for upgrades. I don't know that Josh Hart and Yusuf Nurkic are enough to kind of like get them really excited. I think the Suns have bigger names in mind for their trade assets. But I do kind of think that there's a chance that the Blazers will be shaking up the roster here in the next couple of weeks. What are your thoughts on the Blazers and what they might do at the deadline?
Yeah, it makes sense, right? I think it's pretty clear that there'll be sellers. I mean, I don't know what the future of Jerami Grant, right? Is that the biggest piece that is? Are they likely to move Jerami Grant from anything that you've heard, or is
my
that
understanding
even a possibility?
Is that the, my understanding of the core is Dame, Simons, and Grant. That those are three guys that they are not looking. Like, if you're going to make an offer for Grant, it better be one that they can't refuse.
Right. So, I mean, I guess you could retool for the future and at the same time still try to be competitive and see if maybe things break right for you this season. You know, at Nurkic, I agree with you. I think his defensive limitations make it difficult to build that kind of team there. I just don't see any team kind of clamoring for him at this point in his career, given his injury history and everything else and those limitations. So I'm not sure if he's a needle mover. Josh Hart, you know, the potential, the versatility and things of that sort make him more of an intriguing player as far as a potential trade is concerned. But we're kind of in this multi-year rebuild for the Blazers here. We're not quite sure. They've traded away CJ McCollum, obviously, and that feels like an eternity ago. And at the same time, it's kind of still fresh because it's just kind of this season is more exacerbation of the same thing, where it's just like, what kind of team is this going to be? Are they going to be an offensive powerhouse? Are they going to be able to commit? Are they going to be able to build something tangible and win at a high level? And that just hasn't been the case. They were surprisingly good early this season. Of course, they've slipped some since then. So I'm not sure what to make of it from the Blazers' perspective. Although, you know, if you can get the right player, maybe you can unlock something and again build towards something much more competitive next season.
Elsewhere, I got a question for you, because there is an idea floating out there. This has been the local reporting in Miami has been very interesting to track. So Kyle Lowry, would you agree that Kyle Lowry has not had a great season relative to his contract? Would you agree with that?
Oh, that's the second part of that statement. Yeah, makes it very important. Yes, relative to his contract. That is the sticking point for a lot of Heat fans.
So relative to his contract, he's not had a great season, and he's getting up there in age, and the Heat are really struggling offensively. Like, this offense just can't really produce points on a night-to-night consistent basis. He always looking to make trades, always looking to add, like, they always want to swing for the fences, all those types of things. But Lowry's probably at this point, given the Hero extension, probably their best contract, their best asset is probably Kyle Lowry. You kind of shake your head there. Am I wrong?
I don't know that they have any good assets. I mean, so maybe that's, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, you would have argued Duncan Robinson, but, you know, coming off of injury and surgery, I mean, and he's not exactly shooting lights out the way he was a couple seasons ago. He's a player that, I mean, my co-host and I have talked about it before. He could probably use a change of scenery, and he could wind up being a 43-44% three-point shooter the way he was not that long ago. But he just, the offense is stifled, and they just haven't been using dribble handoffs effectively to get him those or easy looks that he had, you know, before he signed that big contract, which he's admitted was put a pressure for him to produce at a consistent level. So yeah, they don't have a lot of. I mean, you could argue maybe Caleb Martin's your best trade asset because he's overproduced. He's starting at the four ostensibly, and he's been productive, and he's on a relatively cheap deal. So yeah, as far as assets go, maybe he's the best one. But you're right, as far as if you're going to swing for the fences, as you said, Kyle Lowry's probably your best bet.
The teams I've heard that have some interest in him, two I can mention are the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Clippers. Clippers want a point guard. They really want a point guard. They're also looking at Fred VanVleet with the Raptors as well. So, you know, I think the Clippers could probably send some stuff that are win now pieces. Like, their roster is pretty full of guys that can help win now. I don't necessarily know that, like, I don't know what the Heat do at point guard. I guess they just move Tyler Hero to full-time point guard. Would that be like the move if they didn't get one back in trade? Or does Gabe Vincent move into a starting role if they did this? This is all assuming they would even move Lowry, which, again, not saying it's going to happen, saying that it's a question that's being asked around the league is whether or not the Heat are going to move Lowry.
Local reporting just a couple of days ago from Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald, indicating that the Heat front office have no intention of trading Kyle Lowry. Okay. That, again, that's been difficult to pinpoint. It's not that Barry isn't plugged in necessarily. It's just that, you know, they've changed course so quickly over the years that it's hard to predict exactly what they'll do. And I don't think there is a team that is much more quiet about potential moves. If they're going to pull off a trade, it's probably something that we haven't seen coming. And I don't know that Lowry, with all the discussion around him, I'm not sure he is going to be traded. I would say no at this point.
What's funny is like their free agency signings are extremely telegraphed. Like, you know who they're going to sign months before it happens. But you're right that the trade stuff, I think, does kind of happen quietly. And yeah, Barry Jackson did report that, and Jackson's very plugged in down there. What I think is interesting here is like it may be one of those things where I'm hearing like, oh yeah, like there's teams that are interested and really want to try and get Lowry, and that was like 3 weeks ago. And now, like, the Heat have reached a point where they're just like, no, the offers aren't good enough. We're just going to stand pat. Especially because the idea was that, like, the Heat had played a little bit better. And right. and then again, they got worse, because that's kind of been the thing. I just want to, like, predicting what's going to happen, because this stuff is all...
Right. Up in here.
Manure, right? a lot of manure being stewed around the league. Do you think that the Heat should try and move Lowry for a long-term youth upgrade?
Are you talking about D'Angelo Russell? Is that the move? I mean, I know that we discussed it on our podcast too, and that's the one that's most commonly linked there. You could take a flyer on D'Lo. He's an unrestricted free agent. You're not missing much. You won't necessarily free up any cap space in the move there, because you'll still be tied to Russell's contract. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know that trading him is the right move. Like, we saw against the New Orleans Pelicans both the good and bad of Kyle Lowry. You know, I know you retweeted something that I posted about him passing up a wide open 3-point shot to Victor Oladipo, who's a much worse shooter, and wind up missing the rim completely on his attempt. And then later on that same game, he had a sensational fourth quarter, like responsible for 9 straight points, helping them come back from a 16-point deficit to knock off the Pelicans. You know, who were shorthanded without Zion and Brandon Ingram, but still a good solid win at home for the Heat. And that's the potential, right? That's the hope, is that he'll be able to tie more of those type of performances. But he's just been so differential since he's joined the Heat. And I know he's always been a pass-first guard anyway, but he's not looking to score the way he did in Toronto. He's not capable of scoring the way he did in Toronto. He's just not physically able, really, not consistently. And I don't think the Heat are using him properly. But giving all that, look, the big X factor in any kind of Lowry trade, his friendship with Jimmy Butler. Like, they'd have to get his approval for a trade. And sending him to the cold wastelands of Minnesota, where he can't play golf in between games, that would be like the ultimate punishment. He would have to like have insulted Pat Riley's wife in order for him to get banished to the wastelands of Minnesota. I just don't see it likely happening, even for a player like Russell, who might provide a little bit more offensive punch.
I'm sure they got Topgolf in Minnesota. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be all right. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about the games around the association on Monday, including the Bucks putting up a big number in Chris Middleton's return. A second-year sophomore having a career-high night that I know David's excited to talk about, and some more just absolutely ridiculous scoring figures. We'll talk about all that and more when we come back on Locked On NBA. Thanks for making Locked On NBA your first listen today. Make your second listen, Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result, Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA, available on the Aussie app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts in this feed right here. All right, final segment here with David Ramil on a Monday. We got a lot of places to start. Let's go ahead and get this out of the way. I want to get this out of the way for you, okay? You ruffled the feathers of some Rockets fans, and when you I want to note real clearly that when you talked about Jalen Green being a future bench player, in preseason. I didn't retweet that. I didn't send that show out. I didn't try it because I knew what would happen to your mentions. I tried to protect you.
It happened anyway. Look,
Jalen Green tonight was phenomenal. Okay, he absolutely tore up a Wolves defense that has been better than advertised. And really, like, there's been like a lot of reasons to think that they are a better defense than what they showed. But the Rockets put up 119, and Jalen Green goes for 42 points on 15 of 25 shooting, 60% from the field, 6 of 12 for 3, 50% from 3, and 6 of 10 at the line for 60%, along with 4 boards and 4 assists. He's a plus 19. They won their minutes by 19, and this is all phenomenal and a reminder of how good Jalen Green can be, could be, has the potential to be in the NBA, which is what I said, is we don't know yet. We'll see what happens to him. I'll also say this, like, Jalen Green's been terrible this season. He's been outright terrible, and a lot of Rockets fans have lost.
I won't say anything about that, yeah.
Have lost their confidence in him. Like, I follow the Rockets fans and what they think a lot, because that no team is more hardcore. And when even the hardcore ones are like, getting a little worried about Jalen Green, it's getting pretty bad. Now, he threw them a bone. This is his second 42-point performance in – like the season. Like, he's had his career high twice this season at 42.
No, and he tied it. He set it at 41 a couple games ago, then surpassed it tonight on a free throw to make it 42.
I thought he tied it. My bad. No, this
was a career night for him.
Good for David for knowing all.
Big Jalen Green fan over here in Miami.
He's capable of this kind of stuff. It's good with Alperen Şengün running the offense. Like, that's going to be the real key. Is like, can he play off of Alperen Şengün and score like this with this efficiency? The defense needs to be better. It was better tonight. He gave a really great performance tonight. He also credited Steven Silas. He said he got onto him at shoot-around this morning for their effort. And, like, Jalen Green, like, really responded to that, which I thought was interesting. So, just generally, what is your reaction to this career night from Jalen Green amidst the season when he's been pretty awful?
Look, the night itself, that sensational performance from him, I don't think it changes what I said about him early in the season. And maybe... again, you know, we record late at night. You put me in a spot with that question. Not throwing you under the bus, Matt, but...
I'll take it. That's my bad.
You set me up to answer in a way about his future. And I still think that's nebulous. Like, I still don't think we have any kind of real clear... like, I know Rockets fans, the positive ones, the ones that are still positive about Jalen Green, are more than willing to say... he's a superstar, future superstar. He's already a superstar. I think that's pushing it a little bit. My point at that time was that even though he's just in his second year, the constant losing, the lack of identity, the lack of a clear purpose from a organizational perspective tends to damage players. Like, you're covering a player now in Aaron Gordon, who I saw for many, many years in Orlando. And I'll never forget, I mentioned this in a recent podcast too. Like, his second season with Steve Clifford, like, after Clifford was there for 1 year and then he was retained for another year, I remember Aaron specifically saying to me, he was like, you know, this is my first year having the same coach on back-to-back seasons. And that is a killer from a career perspective, because you've got to relearn a playbook or learn a new playbook every year. You've got to figure out tendencies. You got to figure out how to roll. Now, I mean, all these different nuances about playing at a high level in the NBA, then it's impossible with all the kind of problems that you go through that he went through specifically in Orlando. Coach after coach, player after player getting traded. What's our identity? What's our purpose? And eventually they were able to achieve the playoffs, and they were a first-round exit, of course, but that was the most ability they had, and of course they wound up trading him the very next season. So, you know, I don't know what the long-term prognosis is on Jalen Green, and I don't think anybody does. And from a Houston Rockets fan, kudos to you if you've got the chutzpah to say, you know what, he's going to make it, he's going to be a future star. I think that's impossible to predict because there are so many factors to consider, whether or not you get a coach, whether or not you get the right kind of cast around Green. Whether or not he can continue to evolve, develop, and establish more team-positive or tendencies other than just being a really, really good scorer, gunner, etc. And those kinds of things, that kind of player often, and I've been covering the league for a while and I've been watching basketball for a lot longer than most Rockets fans, I think those kinds of players, as my point earlier in the season, tend to become better scorers off the bench because they might not be capable of doing much else that contributes towards winning. That was my point about Green early in the season. If I'm wrong, I'm happy to admit it. I don't care. I really could not care less about Jalen Green's future other than he's just another guy who could put up a lot of points in the NBA. There's lots of guys that could put up a lot of points in the NBA, and some of them play in Houston, some of them don't. So I'm getting paid to talk about him regardless and all the rest of the players in the NBA. And look, that's not to take anything away from a really, really spectacular night. 42 points is not a joke. It's a great performance from him. Fantastic night against a very good defense, to your point.
And with, you know, good efficiency and with a plus 19.
Kevin Porter Jr., right? Also, I mean, that's like he's been playing well without Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah, that's
mostly
well. Yeah, that's the when it comes to the Rockets, it's how much better they look with KPJ out. Yeah. My thing is there is understandably a lot of deflection of when Jalen has struggles in terms of like, we'll look at the coaching. And I think that that's fair. I think it's a bad coaching spot. Again, I think probably Steven Silas, if he had a veteran roster, might do a lot better. I've said this since early season. I think if you swap Wes Unseld and Steven Silas, both teams are better off. Give Wes Unseld the young team that doesn't know what it's doing and develop and what needs to learn, like habits and culture. Give Steven Silas the veterans that know how the NBA works. But to me, even with the caveat that I understand the impact of coaching, it's on Jalen. Like Jalen Green gets to decide his future. If he commits on defense, if he commits to efficiency, if he manages his my biggest thing is just his shot decision-making. That's it. It's just his shot selection because he has all these dynamic, explosive plays, and they're incredible. And he has some real playmaking chops. Like his passing has real upside. He also has times when he chucks up a step back 30 footer with 13 on the clock. And you're just like, you gotta run the offense, my man. Like, especially with Şengün on the floor. So we don't know. We'll see what happens, but you're right that there's a lot of guys that can score. There's not a lot of guys that can score efficiently. And that challenge is going to be on Jalen Green. Speaking of scoring elsewhere in the association tonight, how about these scores? The Milwaukee Bucks go to Detroit. The poor Pistons apparently had themselves a great time in Paris. They enjoyed the Paris nightlife is undefeated, even though the Bulls did win tonight, so it's actually not. But anyway, the Bucks get Chris Middleton back, and they put up 150 on Detroit. Just an absolute destruction with Chris Middleton back. Giannis had 20, like midway through the first half. And that wasn't the only one tonight. The Blazers put up 147 in a 20-point win over the Spurs. That game was 74-74 at half. The Houston Rockets, as I mentioned, put up 119. Utah goes for 120 versus the Charlotte Hornets. And the Sacramento Kings light the beam, baby, 133 versus the Memphis Grizzlies. No Ja, no Steven Adams in that game. But the number one half-court defense of the Memphis Grizzlies gets shredded as the Kings put up 133. There's a lot of plays, like places that we can go here. But we've talked about this a couple of times, David.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to complain about the lack of defense. There's no point to it. It's not changing anytime soon. But what I will say is that even with the standard set of defenders not being able to really do anything on the perimeter, which forces help, which opens three-pointers, the Kings shot 12 of 13 in the first quarter from three. And my reaction to that is maybe you should get a hand up. But also, that's incredible shooting. Like, we are in an unprecedented era of NBA shooting because you cannot play defense and you can have ragged, fast games that still don't wind up with the kind of efficiency that we're seeing night to night. Teams are locked in on the offensive end just as much as they are helpless on the defensive end.
I cover the Heat. I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never seen. They blew out these same Pelicans a week ago and had 120 something points. And I was like, I don't know what to do with my hands. I haven't had to cover a game that has. I mean, they've led the league in clutch games this season, and they're struggling offensively. As you pointed out earlier, so it's tough. Like, but to your overall point, yeah, I don't know what to make of it. You know, from a fan perspective. Like, it's fun, right? It's fun to watch those kind of offensive outpourings. And it's just, you know, great three-point shooting. And at the same time, it seems a little problematic because, you know, you want games to be competitive. And when you get blown out to this extreme and then one team invariably winds up giving up, and look, you know, the 150 points, you can chalk it all up to the Parisian pandemic or the fact that it's the Pistons, whatever. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. You make it seem like it's a negative thing.
I don't want to.
I know. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. From my perspective, it's fun, but at the same time, like I just like games to be more competitive. I wish it was 150 to 147, but I guess it's not the late or the early 80s and late 70s where they were putting up those kind of games.
I think where I'm at though is if it's happening all over, if everyone's getting 50, if everyone's getting 40, if everyone's getting 30. Like, we're on pace for the most 30-point games in NBA history, not by a little, but by, like, a ton.
A lot, yeah.
It loses something. Like, it's no longer, like, what an incredible scoring performance. It's yet another incredible scoring performance. And it warps some of the arc of history, like, trying to compare what we used to see from some of these guys to what we're seeing now. I have a hard time trying to put it into perspective. And if you say, like, well, teams are, like, offenses are just better now, players are more skilled. I agree. But because everyone's doing it, I have a hard time being able to like put any of it into perspective. It's a wild season. It does seem like a lot of teams are having fun, though. Like that's one of the counters here is that unlike the last couple of seasons under COVID, teams seem like they're having fun. Like guys are having fun playing together. They are moving the ball. A lot of this is generated from good offense. However, my favorite thing about tonight is that the Bucks go for 150, the Rockets go 119, the Jazz go 120. The Blazers go 147, the Kings go 133, and the number one offense in the National Basketball Association, the Boston Celtics. I'm sorry, they were number one for a long time. It's the Kings now. But the Boston Celtics, who have been an incredible offense all season, they scored 98 points versus the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, hard to figure that one out, too. I mean, solid defense from the Magic, obviously, who've been a lot more plucky than a lot of people expected them to be, and maybe some people aren't even aware because, you know, they don't watch the Orlando Magic despite the fact that they have Paolo Banchero there. But the return of Jonathan Isaac probably providing a little bit of an emotional boost there and, you know, up for the challenge of facing a very good Celtics team. Yeah, I don't know. I can see that point that it takes some of the luster off of it. And maybe this is just we're caught in the a mid-step along the evolutionary ladder here of the NBA, and we're not quite sure how to process what we're seeing. Maybe in another couple of years, this will be just, you know, the way things are, and we'll just adjust accordingly the way we always have. Like, I mean, at some point, you know, I know you and I both sat through 90 to 85 playoff games in the mid-90s and late-90s, and we changed, we evolved, and we kind of figured out, okay, now we can do things a little differently. And so that just might be the case, is that we're currently in the middle of seeing the league become something very, very different. And eventually something will change that too. There'll be a rule change, or the defenses, individuals will rise to that challenge and impact those kinds of things. And look, you know, with more and more switchable bigs here, I wonder if we'll see, you know, instead of having five Draymonds out there, maybe it'll change in a way that roster building kind of impact the overall defensive performances across the league. I don't know exactly what the next step is, but you know what? Let's just try to enjoy it. I think that's the best bet for all of our listeners and maybe even for you, Matt.
I do. I really do. I love the style of play right now. It's diverse. Yeah. You got post-ups, you got dribble handoffs, you got motion. Like teams are running a bunch of different stuff. It's no longer just pick and roll, spread pick and roll anymore. So the league is in a really good place. I feel bad for the defenders. I want to give the defenders some help because they're just so helpless right now. One more thing before we get out of here. Memphis Grizzlies, by the way, they lose to the Kings tonight, light the beam. Grizzlies fall to 5-11 on the road versus Western Conference opponents. So they are dynamite at home. They're almost unstoppable. But the Grizzlies and Warriors, for whatever reason, cannot win on the road versus the West. And that's getting to be like an interesting kind of subplot. We'll see how that plays out.
Is that just the Grizzlies, before we wrap it up, is that the Grizzlies just being the kind of emotionally charged, high variance sort of team where they, you know, they can beat up opponents at home and then who knows what kind of a performance they're going to put on the road? Is that a concern for you? Or do you think, like from the Warriors, right, we've seen this so often over the few years of their dynasty here, where we expect them to be able to change it. Memphis, not quite as experienced, obviously, so maybe that's more of a concern for that team.
I'm really concerned about Memphis on the road in the playoffs. Their half-court offense is ranked bottom 10 in the league. So, like, they can't consistently score. Now, they're without John Stephen Adams tonight, right?
That'll do it, right?
You know, and this Kings team gets downhill really fast, and they're at home and, like, all these type of things. But I still have a real concern about what's going to happen when the game slow down and Memphis has to go on the road and grind out possessions. I have some concerns about that for them in the playoffs. Okay. Doesn't mean that they're going to lose. MT in the comments, by the way, I did want to share this. Did you guys see the Mark Stein report about the Suns wanting Fred VanVleet and any thoughts on that? I'll just real quick go over this. VanVleet's got a number of offers, or the Raptors have a number of offers for Fred VanVleet. I think he probably gets moved. It makes the most sense for the Raptors just from a money perspective to not commit long-term to him. They've stared those situations down before, so I don't want to count it out. If they don't get good return, they won't do the deal. That's the thing with Masai, he'll never lose a trade. But I think the Suns make a lot of sense. The Clippers make a lot of sense. There's probably a three-way that could probably be figured out somewhere in there. I think Fred VanVleet is a guy that legitimately moves the needle. When he is healthy, engaged, and happy, that guy is a player that 2 years ago was in the top 10 in the league for, this is just raw total, for top 10 in threes, top 10 in assists. That's hard to do. He is a high caliber, high IQ player that helps you win in the playoffs. So if the Suns, if the Clippers, if the Wolves, if any of those teams are looking for a point guard, if they manage to get Fred VanVleet, I'm going to upgrade them considerably in their pursuit of a championship. You got any thoughts on FVV?
I still think he has potential. Look, it's been a tough year, obviously, but he could just be looking for a change of scenery himself. And that matters. Like, there are players that you just put them in a different situation and all of a sudden they become shades of what they were. And with him, that was such a high level that I agree with you. I think any team that acquires them will become instantly much more stable, much more capable, and much more potent.
Let's go wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Follow us on YouTube as well to catch the show in the live video version. Thanks for joining us. You can follow David on Twitter at DRamil13. I'm at HP Basketball. Tomorrow, you got John Corrales and Jake Madison catching up on all the action from Tuesday. Thanks for joining us. Have yourselves a great week. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On NBA.